This is the Colin McEnroe Show. It stands to reason that I'm Colin McEnroe, and this is Alan Doyle and the Beautiful Gypsies.
When I say 1, 2, you say 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. When I say 1, 2, you say 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Whiskey, whiskey, the singer's getting sore. We raise the roof, now we're lowering the floor. The band is pissed, but we got a little more. When I say 1, 2, you say 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. All together gone, it's now or never if you want another song. On and on goes the ringing of the bell. Off we go, this song won't sing itself. So soldiers at my side, it's you and me tonight. Whiskey, whiskey, the singer's getting sore. Raise the roof, now we're lower in the floor. That man is blistered, but we got a little more. When I say 1, 2, you say 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. You gotta let him play. If the devil's wanna dance, then the piper wants his pay. I'll be in a hiding place where good sense never goes, and take me to the fountain where the fire water flows. We'll find our alibis alive and lose ourselves tonight. Whiskey, whiskey, the singer's getting sore. We raise the roof now and over in the floor. The band is blistering, but we got a little more. When I say 1, 2, you say 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Trying to get the whole room on the dance floor is like trying to put a square peg in a round hole. I'm not saying it ain't something that you shouldn't try to do. Don't do it for me, man.
Do it for you.
You're inviting your own manners and behaving yourself. But there's still a lot of bottles left upon the shelf. Wear my little whistle now and give a dog a bone. I can keep it up a notch. Can't do it alone. A soldier's at my side. It's you and me tonight. Whiskey, whiskey. The singers get sore. We raise the roof now and lower in the floor. The band is blessed. When I say 1, 2, you say 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Whiskey, whiskey, the singers get sore. We raise the roof, now we're lowering the floor. The band is blistering, but we got a little more. When I say 1, 2, you say 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I'm in studio right now with Alan Doyle, a man whose voice has been in my ears for many, many years now, first with Great Big C, now as a solo act. But he's what they call a polymath, too, a jack of all trades. He's got a memoir out called Where I Belong. I've just watched your acting reel. I saw you in Robin Hood as Alan Adale, although I don't think I really – when I saw Robin Hood with Russell Crowe, I don't think I thought, wait a minute, is that the Great Big C guy there? Are you a good archer?
I am now. Yeah, we did so much training for that movie. It was super fun, man. It was like a boys' camp. We went to Russell's farm with a bunch of the trainer guys, and our schedule was amazing.
Yeah.
It was like horse riding 9 to 10, archery 10 to 11, break, and then fight training, and then more horse riding and archery. It was really cool. It was
so you're a killing machine now, basically.
You know what? I got to be fairly good at it, and I thought I was awesome at it until I got to set and saw the real archers and went, oh, right, I'm just an actor. And even the horse riding part was even funnier, of course, because, you know, I lied to get the gig. And when I was asked by the people in the movie, I assume you can ride horses.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I said, yes, I'm from the sweeping plains of Petty Harbor, Newfoundland, on the coast of Canada. Like, you know, of course we have – I don't know if there's ever been a horse in my hometown. I don't know where they would have to have two legs shorter than the other two because it's so hilly. But it was a remarkable experience and a real blessing to get to do something with so many people who are so talented in completely
different walks of life. You know, mm-hmm. to put a movie like that together, it takes amazing actors, of course, and amazing writers. And then, but there's horse trainer people and mm-hmm. costume people and stunt people. And mm-hmm. just a real blessing, man, to get to hang with them for a few months.
It even looked like you were shooting flaming arrows at one point.
We were, yeah. We had a whole bunch of stunts like that with flaming arrows. And we got, you know, we actually got good enough at it so that we kind of saved them a pile of money in post-production because they used to have, they'd have a camera like on a quad or something riding around in the middle of a fight thing
right.
with a plexiglass front on it. And we just shot the arrows at the camera so they didn't have to draw them in and stuff.
Well, that's great. Well, yeah, it's, cool. It's Ridley Scott, so he's going to make you do some of these things.
He's right? a very cool man, I must say. And I learned a lot from him, but the biggest thing was – you know, you never stop learning and you never stop trying. And if you want to, you know, I don't know if anybody worked as hard as him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was there excited every single day and just, you know, very clear indication of like, you know, if you love what you do, then you never have to work a day in your life.
Now, did this happen because I know you've worked musically with Russell Crowe,
yeah.
right? He has a whole musical
That's
dimension.
Right.
Yeah.
I met Russell first in the early 2000s when he was in Toronto doing a movie called Cinderella Man.
Mm-hmm.
And then
it's a great movie, isn't
it?
By the way.
It was one of my favorites, yeah. And then previous to that, he had heard about Great Big Sea through Kevin Durand and a couple of the actor friends of his when they were up doing a hockey movie in Canada called Mystery Alaska. So by the time he and I met in the most Canadian of fashion backstage at the National Hockey League Awards show, we were both giving out a trophy, he had heard of Great Big Sea. And so he was about to do another record with his band in Australia, and he asked if I would write a few songs, which we did, and I had a great time. And then he said, you should come and produce the record, so I did. And we actually toured a little bit with that band in Australia and France and a few places. And then, you know, a number of years later, 6 or 8 years later, he called me up one day and asked if I knew how to play the lute. And I said, yeah, I got to play the lute. You want to come to Australia to read for this, or come to LA to read for this movie? And I said, what is it? And he said, we need like an Irishy sounding fella who can play the lute to play the musician in The Merry Men. And I was like, I think I'd like to do that. So it was cool. It was just like one of those things that like, I always say that I'm the luckiest fella I know. You know, that's just one of those things that literally kind of just came to me, you know, and a wonderful blessing, and it was great fun.
Well, let's hear a song about somebody who's maybe not so lucky. And in fact, we've got the Alan Doyle Orchestra, otherwise known as the Beautiful Gypsies, in here in studio with us. It's called Laying Down to Perish. Set this up for us, because this is one of these many happy, cheerful Newfoundland songs.
Laying Down to Perish is a story of an artifact that I found in a museum in the community of Fogo Island, Newfoundland, which is northeast coast, an island off the island of Newfoundland. That's, you know, on the northern part of that island, of course, is the edge of the earth, really. It is, you know, there's nothing but Antarctica, or rather the north and Greenland, a few hundred thousand kilometers away or something. So it's an isolated place, and it's starkly beautiful, and they have a history of dealing with the harshest climate and doing it well. And in the museum I was in this day, I found an artifact, a gaff. And for seafaring people, they'll know a gaff is like a long wooden handle tool that might have a spike or a curve on the top of it that fishermen or sealers or mariners or sailors would use for a million different things. And I was told a story of how four guys left Fogo Island in the winter, went out onto the ice, and the fog rolled in and the wind shifted, and they knew they were never getting home. So they must have been worried that their wives or families or moms or dads would never know what happened to them, because one of them carved into the wooden handle, laying down to perish. And he carved their four names, and he set it adrift. And I thought, and a few weeks later, it washed ashore in Morton's Harbor, I think, and was brought over to the families of the missing men. And I just thought it was an incredible act of selflessness, you know, to think of other people at a time that must have been terrifying for those guys. And in the spirit of kind of bringing stories from where I'm from in Newfoundland and Labrador to the world, I just thought this was one that had to be spoken to. So this song is called Laying Down to Perish. Well, living isn't easy, dying isn't hard, when the hungriest days of winter plays our wicked cards. I'll not be called a quitter, for I choose to take a leap. The ice won't ever be broken, not by no man, not by me,
now I'm laying down to perish, and God knows where I'll go. Now I'm laying down to perish. I just wanted you to know. I just wanted you to know. I'll make my wife a widow, but I won't have her chase the shore. Be the candle in the window and foolish all above the door. I've got no time for haunting the ones I've held so dear. So I'll carve the crudest message now before I disappear. And I'm laying down to perish, and God knows where I'll go. Now I'm laying down to perish. I just wanted you to know. I just wanted you to know. Sad to pass to a lies beyond the snow, but to have you think I left you would break my heart and soul. So let there be a warm hereafter in the sweetest by and by. Let my house be filled with laughter should I ever cross your mind. Now I'm laying down to perish, God knows where I'll go. Now I'm laying down to perish. I just wanted you to know. Now I'm laying down to perish, God knows where I'll go. Now I'm laying down to perish. I just wanted you to know. I just wanted you to know.
Well, coming back from that song, I mean, I think we maybe do have to talk a little bit about Newfoundland and about Petty Harbor. You've chronicled this in your memoir, Where I Belong. You've referred to this place as a kind of Narnia.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, my hometown was a place like many fishing towns that are isolated in that they're little harbors, right? There's no – in history, there was no roads going to them. You can only get to them by boat. I mean, now in my generation, of course, Petty Harbor was connected by a road or two. But it still felt like and still feels like a complete little world of its own. And so it developed all – like these towns, you learn how to – it has its own economy. You learn how to work in them. You learn how to play in them. You learn how to entertain yourself in them. So it has its own songs. It has its own culture. It has its own characters. It has its, kind of has its own rules in the weirdest kind of way. And so when I moved out of there when I started going to university, and I moved to St. John's, the city in Newfoundland, and so I left it a long time ago, and it's all the craziness and the kind of oddities of my young life have kind of stewed in my own mind about how what an unusual upbringing I had. Mm-hmm. And I talked about it in the book, Where I Belong. And what I discovered in writing it is that I had no idea how much my young life prepared me for my adult life. I mean, you'd think if you were growing up in a little fishing town in the late 70s and early 80s on the coast of Newfoundland, cutting out cod tongues on the wharf, helping the fishermen load and unload boats, you know, doing stuff that is very specific to that town, you wouldn't think that that would prepare you for a life around the world. But it so and certainly did, you know, and the lessons I learned about hard work and teamwork and being a big part of a small thing or a small part of a big thing just have stayed with me for the rest of my life. So I think of that as a, you know, a Narnia kind of place that just, it lives in my mind, yet is the most influential part of my adult life?
Well, I mean, I think in terms of the ratio of people to dead giant squids, I think you had an unusually high or a close ratio, we might say.
Well, it's what I always say about Newfoundland, right, because it's a sort of odd island right up in the middle of the ocean. And it's the place where in the storyteller friends of mine, whether they're songwriters or playwrights or actors or movie writers or whatever, they always, you know, our joke in Newfoundland is that, you know, everywhere else on Earth, you have to spruce up your stories to make them entertaining. In Newfoundland, we have to dumb them down to make them believable, because it is the place where the myths are true, right? Mm-hmm. It is the place where the Titanic sank. Mm-hmm. It is the place where giant squid wash ashore. It is a place where we have sea monsters. It is a place that was too rough for the Vikings. They left. And it was like, pansies. You know, it is that I feel really lucky to have grown up in a place that's so unique and so, singular in its way. And also where the stories are true.
Well, I should say we have a large Viking audience. And to those people, that was just a metaphor. I mean, he didn't really mean that about you.
Oh, no, I do. I do. I always, it's one of my greatest things about my chest pumping as a Newfoundlander is like, weren't the Vikings there? Yeah, they left. They couldn't handle it. Vikings. Pfft.
So you mentioned your job cutting out cod's tongues, and this is right in the book. But that might be sort of a puzzling thing for a person. Is it so the cods won't tell what happened to them? Or go into a little bit more detail.
That's a very fair thing. I talk about it in the book. I talk about how cutting out tongues, can I have your tongues, cod tongues. Like, those phrases were so common growing up where I grew up, and everybody knew exactly what they meant. But, of course, it would be horrifying I actually wanted to call my book Cutting Out Tongues. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, the editor in Toronto talked me out of it because it would sound like a horrible, you know, kind of act. But cutting out cod tongues, the cod tongues are kind of a delicacy in the inshore cod fishery in Newfoundland. So it was that place where the fish came ashore, of course, and they were handled one at a time by people. So all the stuff got used. You know, the cod's tongues were cut out, the livers, the breeches, the sound bone, the fillets, the tails, the skins. So, and cod tongues were sort of the responsibility of the young boy. And they are exactly what they are. You sort of cut the bottom part of a cod's head. I'm sort of drawing a line along the bottom of my chin. And you can imagine if you cut out the piece of flesh under your chin and your tongue would fall out. That's the part we cut out. And it's a delicious little piece of fish that kind of ends up the texture of like a scallop or something like that. And we used to sell them. That was the boys' jobs. And it sounds like hard work to be down on the wharf all the time when you're 10 years old working. Mm-hmm. You can imagine people doing it now. But when I was a kid, everybody did it. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, it was the most fun, man. It just went down there because you kind of felt you made a bit of money, first of all, but you also kind of, and you were hanging around with all your buddies. But you also felt like you were an adult, like you were working with the men, and you got to hear them curse and swear and watch them drinking, and you know, and you were a part of the community in a way that it's tough to get kids to do now.
Well, you know, you said actually growing up in Petty Harbor that work was a very visible thing.
Yeah.
First there's no pile of fish, then there's a pile of fish. There's no hole in the ground, and then there's a hole in the ground. And that when you became a musician, it was sometimes a difficult thing to explain to people back home that this was a job, the way they thought of jobs.
I mean, I actually still kind of sheepishly say at the border when they ask me what I do for a living, I say I play in a band or something. I'm still afraid to say writer or musician or something. It sounds like... My grandmother passed away a number of years ago, but she was a great lady. And she, one of her, my favorite quotes from her, and she had many, was, "Alan, honey, you're still playing in the band?" And I go, "Yeah." "Not working?" And I go, "No, not working." No. But because I grew up in a family of musicians who all had jobs.
And
right?
This is when you're playing in a band that could fill a hockey arena, you know. Which, in terms of Canadian measurements, I mean, what could be a bigger deal?
Yeah.
But you're not working.
Yeah, it is. But that was the sort of the philosophy around music, you know. And I grew up, in an incredibly musical family of you know, musicians and singers that could have played in bands anywhere in the world. But they just never thought of it that way. Mm. They all went up and got up in the morning on Monday and went to work and did their various jobs. And on Friday nights, they played for the concert, or they played for the dance, or they played for the fire hall thing, or they played for the church mass, or they played for the. And it was just that was their kind of musical hobby. Even though I hate to call it that, because they were so good at it.
All right, we're talking to Alan Doyle. His book is called Where I Belong. His band is called Alan Doyle and the Beautiful Gypsies. We're going to have the Beautiful Gypsies come back and play another song. They're going to be playing – well, actually, I'll let Alan introduce it.
Let's do it. We'll do – are you ready?
Yeah.
When I'm waiting for Corey. Corey's all like, I want to be in tune.
There's always one.
There's always one? Just one?
That's right.
There's always one person who insists on being in tune.
All right. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So this is a song. We'll pick it up a bit. This is a song called I Can't Dance Without You. And it's really just a tune I wrote with a couple of friends about my longstanding love affair with the people that come to see us play. I Can't Dance Without You. Well, there's a war in every heart. There's a battle for every scar. There's a wish for every star. I know it's true. I can't fly on one wing. Without a word, I got nothing to sing. There's a jewel for every ring, and I know it's you. I'll tell you no lies, I'll tell you nothing but the truth. You give me tonight, I'll give a lifetime back to you. Whoa, whoa. Like the moonlight without the moon. Oh, 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 oh. I can't dance without you. Oh, oh, oh. You're like a song without a tune. Oh, 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 oh. I can't dance without you. I'm gonna need a little help. I don't know these steps so well. My hand can't hold itself. It takes two. I know I can't keep the time till your heart beats into mine. Like the morning needs the night, I need you. Tell you no lies, I'll tell you nothing but the truth. You give me tonight, I'll give a lifetime back to you. Oh, oh, oh. Like the moonlight without the moon. Oh, 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 oh. I can't dance without you. Oh, 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 oh. You're like a song without a tune. Oh, 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 oh. I can't dance without you. Oh. Something so rare, it's something beautiful and true. Let the world disappear, just let me stand in front of you. And I'll tell you no lies, I'll tell you nothing but the truth. You give me tonight, I'll give a lifetime back to you. Oh, 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 oh. Like the moonlight without the moon. Oh, 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 oh. I can't dance without you. Oh, 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 you like a song, you like a song. Oh, 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 I can't dance without you. I can't dance without you.
That was Alan Doyle and the Beautiful Gypsies performing I Can't Dance Without You live from the studios of the Colin McEnroe Show. We'll hear more from them coming up right after this break.
On my way to a man, I've done all that I can. I tried every job under the sun. How I dearly enjoyed when Yulia's voice convened for the cutting-out tones. It was the thrill of my life when I first held a knife and was told I could join in the gang. Making cash in my own with a bucket of stone makes the lad feel like more of a man. Oh, the work it was hard from daylight to dark, especially considering our age. But when I was a kid, that's what everyone did on the beach and the wharf and the stage. We'd rush and we'd hurry through old guts and gurry. They were slippery and smelly old days. Oh, the money we got when the tables were topped, but I think we earned more than our pay. It's not for the money alone we whetted and sharpened and honed. With an old knife and steel at the tables we kneel. It's not for the money alone. Summer day was hard on the senses of some, but I never minded. My nose had been blinded by that time and work getting done. Now there's no smell at all from the spring to the fall, no loads to the gunnels to cheer. I look at my son.
We're visiting with Alan Doyle. He's here in Hartford right now, playing at Infinity Hall. He's going to be touring with the Bare Naked Ladies. Actually, it's Bare Naked Ladies, right? It's not the Bare Naked Ladies.
I think so, even though I'm not totally, you know, I confess that. I always find it hard not to put a the.
The the's optional.
Before a band.
I don't think you get fined.
But Bare Naked Ladies have been friends of mine and good supporters of myself and Great Big Sea and many Canadian bands over the years. And Ed and the guys have always been... you know, cool about taking people with them along the ride because they've been so successful and so internationally famous. And they remain humble and grateful people. And as I must say, I'm looking forward to that whole tour.
So I want to go back to Petty Harbor for a second. Yep. I mean, not literally, but the amazing thing about this town, okay, little tiny town, which as you say, wasn't even connected to the land by roads until fairly recently in its history, but nonetheless, kind of a West Side Story situation, right? Jets and Sharks.
Yeah.
So talk about that.
Well, Petty Harbor, the footprint of Petty Harbor is, you know, as you can imagine, it's like a horseshoe kind of town. That's where all the houses are hung off the steep hills that lead to the ocean. And... no, a lot of these towns in Newfoundland history, especially down the southern shore of the Irish kind of settled part of Newfoundland, you know, a Catholic fisherman from the south, you know, east or west coast of Ireland came around the same time as a guy from, a Protestant guy from the south coast of England came. And they all came, and it just so happens that Petty Harbor is split by a river. And they said, how about you go over there and I'll go over here? And I think in the course of history for most other towns, those two communities grew together quicker. Mm-hmm. But in Petty Harbor, they're divided by this river. So even by the time I was a kid, there was no kind of social animosity between the religions or anything like that. But for a generation, or certainly two generations before mine, like in my grandparents' time, it was a big deal, you know, to socialize with the Protestants. And one of the most sort of obvious things about religion and the footprint of it when I was a kid is that the town was actually kind of mirrored. On our little side, this is a town of 500 people. Mm-hmm. On our side, on the Catholic side, we had a Catholic fish plant. We had a Catholic store.
Maureen's.
Yeah. We had a Catholic church, a school. You know, and then you flip it over, the mirror image on the other side, exactly the same things for the Anglicans on the other side, which is ridiculous. You think about it in history that was the way it is. But that was the way it is. And like I try to get across in the book and in some of my songs as well. It's like in Newfoundland, and I don't think it's unique to Newfoundland, but in small towns, especially small towns that are isolated and have been in one place for a long time, you do things just because that's the way they've always been done. And you never pause for a moment to think about, wouldn't it be cooler if we had one big store that looked after everybody? But you didn't, and it's just a beautiful thing in a way that something is so frozen in time. And I mean, the footprint, the physical footprint of the town is almost identical today as what it was when I was a kid, right? It's like there's no highway where there once wasn't one. There's no mall where there used to be just a shop. You know, it's just it's a wonderfully frozen in time place for me.
Do people ever show up there and say, is this where, show me where Alan Doyle grew up?
All the time, apparently, yeah. All the time. I wonder if I'm driving the locals cracked now because I hope I'm not a source of annoyance or embarrassment to them. No, I'm there quite a bit myself. I was just there a little while ago. And I think I really get a sense, and I hope I'm not being boastful or foolish, but I get a sense that they're happy for me and happy that the story of the town is out there for people. And they're I think they feel a little grateful that someone at least captured a little moment in time.
Well, you got to tell at least give us one little vignette from Betty Harbor, Where I Belong is full of them. But since we mentioned the store, this is run by a woman named Maureen. Yeah. And when you have kind of a captive audience, like where else are they going to go buy anything? Well, first of all, the rule was you really had to go to Maureen's, right? You couldn't turn left instead of right or right instead of left.
Yes, I'm glad you brought her up because it gives me a chance to paint a more round and a complete picture of her, because I was a little worried after I released the book that I might have suggested that my view of Maureen and her store was the way she was with everyone. And it turns out, of course, that she was an extremely charitable person in the community and helped dozens of families, when they had a little bit of money and stuff, and was an extremely good mom to her children. But when I was a kid, my view of the two sides of Petty Harbor was sort of exemplified by the two stores. And over on the Anglican or Protestant side was a store called Weir's Store, and it was just beautiful. It was picture perfect, like you might see in a movie set, this friendly thing. And over on the Catholic side was the Maureen's store, that was way much more unkempt and much more and she was a much more gruff character at least that's how she appeared when I was a kid. And it was just funny that we always went there, and I never, until I was probably 40, I never even questioned, why did we go to that store, you know, and why didn't we go to the other store? But we're talking about the store, but we could equally say the same thing about the fish plant. We could equally say the same thing about who I played ball hockey with. It's really funny. There was a photo, you know, like sometimes the local newspapers might print a photo, say, from 20 years ago. Do you know anyone in this photo? There was a photo in the Telegram paper in Newfoundland from Petty Harbor, and it was 1979. And it was six kids playing street hockey, five guys and a girl, right? And I looked at them, and I knew everybody in it, and they were all – it was really funny. They were all kids that went to the Anglican school, and there was not a single Catholic person in it. And it was just so funny because that's what we did. We played street hockey or ball hockey over on one side of the harbor, and they would play on the other side. And we almost never played together. When we did, it was like a summit series or something. You know, it was like – it's just really funny how the physical footprint of it kind of lingered on, and the physical footprint of the divide of religion lingered on in my lifetime. You know, it's incredible.
All right, we're going to have Alan Doyle and the Beautiful Gypsies play another song. Corey Tedford and Kendall Carson are part of what you're hearing. Alan Doyle is the lead voice on all this. And Corey Tedford has changed into a T-shirt that says, two more songs and I'm going down to the bus. So,
I think is today the day you're running 16 kilometers. Is that today?
No, thank God. It's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Corey's training for yet another triathlon or some god-awful thing like that. And so,
your life is not rigorous enough as it is.
Exactly.
All right. So what are we going to hear now?
I brag because we only have one Newfoundlander who's really in fit shape like that, so we have to brag about it. I thought we'd do the title track from the So Let's Go record. Seems how we're talking about being active, getting on the go. This is a song really just about taking advantage of a night that you might be given and knowing that your time is short, so you might as well make the most of it. So let's go. Watching the sand fall gets you nothing like the hands on the clock wall. Oh, I love it when you're standing up so tall and all you are is all aglow. Here we are in our own space, not believing every bright smile that I've faced. Keep them coming cause I'm feeling the same way. Turn it on and off we go. For so long, we lead and we follow tonight till tomorrow. We go and we go
bright night that finds us all together. What has long been denied us could be ours to know. I can see you moving, so let me hear it when you whisper I'm losing. And I can feel it when your heart beats the truth in. It's the only thing I know. That's all. We'll run till we fall and the closing bell's calling. We're only here for so long. We lead and we fall and tonight till tomorrow. We go and we go till we're gone. So let's go. So long. We lead and we follow tonight till tomorrow. We go and we go till we're gone. So let's go.
The song was So Let's Go. The musicians are Alan Doyle, Kendall Carson, and Corey Tedford. We got to take a break right now, but we'll return with more music and conversation right after this.
Cutting out cod tongues? That's a job you can get? For me, it's just a hobby. Today's show was produced by Lydia Brown, with help from me, Kyone Wolf, and Jean Amatruda. Our interns are Dan Schultz and Sarah Flaherty. The part of Bill Curry was played by Russell Crowe. For show pages, articles, and photos of the Faith Middleton Show staff sitting on a curb in New London at 2 in the morning singing sea shanties, visit our website, wnpr.org/Colin. On tomorrow's show, the nose wonders how affectionate you should get with your robot. And now, back to Colin.
We're back with Alan Doyle. Alan Doyle's in town. Very exciting for me. I mean, I really have been a big fan for a long time, and A Great Big Sea has been a terrific band for me. And, well, first of all, you should say who these other two musicians
are. Yes, it's my old friend Corey Tedford playing the guitar and the mandolin over there, a wonderful singer from Newfoundland. Known him for a long time. And over on the fiddle is Kendall Carson. I met Kendall a long time ago as well. She plays with a bunch of people, including myself, and she just got off a tour with John Prine. And she plays with Elvis Costello sometimes in a whole. She's amazing, and it's a wonderful. The whole Beautiful Gypsies is a really all star band of my musical friends that I met over the years. And when we go out on these shows, we do some songs from my records, some songs from the Great Big Sea catalog, some traditional Newfoundland music, and some fun covers. Just all geared towards making the greatest kitchen party of your life.
Actually, Alan, you've got a song from Great Big Sea that's about a kitchen party, right? It's called "Going Up." Let's listen to the recorded version of it. So I just want to talk a little bit about the music itself. So when I first started listening to Great Big Sea, it was hard to put a name on it. You know, it's sort of Newfoundlandicana. If there's Americana, maybe there's Canadicana, Newfoundlandicana. Yeah, yeah. So so it's sort of roots music, and then there's an overlay. I mean, the songs that you're playing today, which are newer songs, newer compositions, have a little bit of an alt-country feel to them at times. Yep. And so, I mean, it's category-defying music, but there is, I take it, a Newfoundland sound, right? There is a sound.
Well, Newfoundland, the part of Newfoundland that I'm from especially, was really defined by the more Irish and Celtic people that settled there. So like when I grew up, accordions were much more common than guitars, you know. But all that said, much like parts of Ireland too, Newfoundland is a song place. Mm-hmm. Like if you compare it to, say, Cape Breton Island, where there's a huge tradition of fiddling and instrumental music, far greater a thing in Newfoundland is songs and songwriting and stories and local songs, because most of those little fishing towns like mine didn't have libraries. They didn't have local newspapers. You know, people's history, tragedy, rise and fall and celebration all got recorded in song or story, you know, and that's – so we sort of did it ourselves and made your own entertainment and that kind of thing. And I think in my own music, I was very lucky to grow up in that sort of influence, because I always looked to my own backyard first. I never tried to sound like I was from Chicago, or I never tried to sound like I was from London. You know, I was totally happy singing songs about, you know, fishermen's gaffs and Captain Kidd's and drinking whiskey and singing at the local place. So that was always good enough for me. You know, that was the most honest thing I thought I could bring to people. And I was, because I was born into a place that sang its own songs, so I was never afraid to do that way.
I think one thing that you did, and you're not the only person to do it, but one thing that you did, it's not surprising to me that you have an acting career now. And we should say it's not just in Robin Hood. You've been in a bunch of TV shows, and I couldn't even figure out watching your acting reel what all these different things were. But you have an acting career. But it seems to me that one of the things that you did sometimes was take traditional songs or traditional sounding songs and emote them more than one typically might. Like I went last night, just getting ready for this, I was listening to sing General Taylor. Well, that can be done, you know, as this very funereal march in a very almost sort of ritualized way. But the way that you sing it, your voice is quite full of emotion. Yeah. It seems as though every time you sing, you're kind of acting.
Well, I was really blessed when I started in Great Big Sea, of course, to work with Sean McCann and Bob and Daryl, who knew far more about traditional music than I did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew a lot about sort of Irishy, like Clancy Brothers kind of Irish music, because that's what my father and my uncles all played. But those guys, Sean and Bob and Daryl, knew way more about Newfoundland music, way more about different, you know, British Celtic bands. And so I learned so much from them, and I'm eternally grateful to them. But I think one of our things we wanted to do was we wanted to reinvent some of the Newfoundland songs and write songs that sounded like Newfoundland songs, but yet make them usable for the places that we were playing. And of course, our entire apprenticeship was in the pubs of Atlantic Canada. So if you're singing General Taylor, you can't do it like you're in the back of the folk library with patches on your sleeves, you know, discussing the economic impact of the, you got to blow the guts out of people, you know, because you're competing with all the other awesome stuff that happens in a pub, right? So they had to be kind of over the top, and they had to be kind of energetic, and they had to be, you know, in your face, for lack of a better term. So that they just wouldn't work. Like we wouldn't have got away with it unless they were excited. And so that's, I think that's what, to live up to the energy that already lives in an Atlantic Canadian pub, you got to be on fire by the time you hit the stage. And so that was how Great Big Sea learned. That's where we kind of cut our teeth.
Well, it's been so great. I mean, it really is an honor to have you here in the studio.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you.
When I heard this was possible, I said, absolutely. We are totally doing this. Alan Doyle. First of all, mention the name of the newest CD.
The new record is called So Let's Go. I'm touring a bunch in Canada in the next few months with Bare Naked Ladies. But then right after Christmas, I'm back down here in the U.S. All the dates and stuff are on alandoyle.ca. You'll find me, and I'd love to see you. Thank you so much.
And so we've come to the part of the show where I make musicians play songs they haven't played in a while. I did this to Winterpils. They were here, and There's a song that I listen to by them when I go to sleep, and they hadn't played it in like 16 years, but they played it, and I fell asleep. So that's not going to happen now. So, you know, I mean, Alan Doyle, you're up here in Hartford, Connecticut. You really don't think of this as kind of the Maritimes, not an oceanic kind of place. But in fact, Captain Kidd came all the way up the Connecticut River, and people look for his treasure one town north from here in Windsor, Connecticut. That's, there's this little island in the river where people think, of course, they look for his treasure everywhere. Basically.
He got around, didn't
he? Yeah, he did. So I've been walking around the house for the last 24 hours, annoying my significant other by singing this song. So we're going to go out with Alan Doyle, without the beautiful gypsies, because they don't know this song, playing just a little bit of Captain Kidd.
My name is Captain Kidd, as I sailed, as I sailed. Oh, my name is Captain Kidd, as I sailed. My name is Captain Kidd, and God's laws I did forbid. And most wickedly I did as I sailed. My father taught me well to shun the gates of hell, but against him I rebelled as I sailed. He shoved the Bible in my hand, but I left it in the sand, and I pulled away from land as I sailed. My name is Captain Kidd, as I sailed, as I sailed. Oh, my name is Captain Kidd, as I sailed. My name is Captain Kidd, and God's laws I did forbid, and most wickedly I did as I sailed. I murdered William Moore, and I left him in his gourd 20 leagues away from shore as I sailed. Oh, and being crueler still, that gooder I did kill, oh, his precious blood did spill as I sailed. My name is Captain Kidd, as I sailed, oh, my name is Captain Kidd, as I sailed. My name is Captain Kidd, and God's laws I did forbid, and most wickedly I did as I sailed.